Welcome to Environmentality, a podcast for environmental news, lectures, and interviews with the experts. I'm your host, Dr. Brendan Anthony. Let's dive on in. Welcome to the show, everybody. Today I have one of my dear friends, Piper Essick, on from Petals by Piper, and she's going to be talking to us today about sustainable floristry. So welcome to the show, Piper. Thanks for joining me.
Hi, I'm very excited to be here.
Good. So how about we jump on in, and I want to hear a little bit about your background, your upbringing. I know your parents are, you know, avid environmentalists. So I want to know kind of how you got, you know, into this world of environmentality, as the podcast would state, but just how you got so passionate about the environment.
Yeah, for sure. So I was actually raised down in Southern California, like living in the middle of avocado and citrus orchards. My whole family's in ag. So I just kind of grew up around it. And I guess I grew up outside, I think is like the key here. So yeah. I've always just had like a huge like joy for the outdoors. My parents are also, not only is my whole family like an ag, but my parents are also just like super outdoorsy. So like our family vacations were road trips to national parks, and my mom's super into gardening. But that kind of fueled me for in college when picking my major, I actually ended up majoring in natural resource sciences with like an emphasis in environmental science, which was basically just spending like 80% of my college classes outside measuring trees and plants and doing things like that, which I never really utilized. But I do feel like it kind of has led me to where I'm at now, because now working with flowers, it's like a connection to the earth still.
Sure. Yeah, no doubt. Yeah, I was an environmental science major in college as well. And we would do all sorts of amazing classes outside and go camping on islands and go sleep on the top of mountains. So I definitely share that passion and trying to merge the things that you love with the things that you get to learn about. And I think that's, you can't go wrong when you do that.
Totally.
Cool. What was your favorite class?
Oh, I don't even know. I was just talking to someone about college the other day, and I was like, I don't even remember like what my classes were.
Like, I don't you just know you like, spent a lot of time outside.
Classes, you know, I'm like, I don't even know what they were like called. But I feel like also with at Washington State, my group that I like graduated with was pretty small, so we all took the same classes together. So I don't even have like a differentiating like what classes I took. I don't know, just whatever one took me outside.
I love it. And so, during college, were you interested in plants and flowers? Like, when did your interest in flowers and floristry begin?
Yeah, so I've definitely always been like really into plants and just kind of nature in a sense, and just like how things are connected and how things grow. But I will say never really into flowers. I got into this really randomly. It kind of fell into my lap. I met a gal who had her own company and asked me to work for her for the summer. I don't know why she felt like I would like it, I guess. And so that's how I kind of got into it and ended up starting my own business, which I thought was going to be a passion project, which now leads to like my full-time income. But what was kind of funny that I didn't even realize when I started my business was my aunt's a botanist, and I've like always known that, but you know, you just like kind of like what your aunt does, you don't really think about it. Sure, and then my grandma was like the town florist in the little town I grew up in Southern California. And so it really actually makes a lot of sense that I'm into flowers, whether or not I was like super aware that I was like attracted to them.
For sure. So it's definitely in your blood. And I mean, even when you think about agriculture, I mean, it's a form of horticulture, right? They're just trees and flowers, you know, it's all under that same umbrella. So, you know, the green thumb runs thick in your veins, it seems.
Yes, it does.
That's awesome. Do you have a favorite flower?
Oh, it changes like every day.
Yeah. How about a favorite plant?
That's too hard.
Too hard? Too many?
Yeah. That's too hard. Too many. Yeah.
Okay. So bring me back to this initiation. So was this a random gal who asked you to kind of work for her, or were you friends before? Like, how did that all start?
Yeah. So I after college, I spent a lot of time traveling. I'd like work for a while and then I'd just go travel. And so I went on a trip to Southeast Asia for about 3 months. And when I came back, I was just working at a coffee shop, trying to figure out a new job, what I was going to do next. And she was just a regular who came into the coffee shop. And I think just over time, getting to know me and my personality and what I was interested in, then she was kind of like, okay, you got to try this. And so it's still to this day, when people ask me how I got into it, it like truly fell into my lap. I had never even thought about it. I didn't even know how it worked.
Yeah, it's very serendipitous. I'm curious about what it is about being a florist that your personality seemed to mesh well with. Is there a certain unique personality that it takes to be a florist?
Ooh, that's kind of a fun question. Well, for me, I feel like it was like my desire to be like surrounded by plants at all time. And this girl knew that I was like obsessed with houseplants and being outside and doing that thing. So to her, I think she saw that connection to nature, which I will say, like, personality for florists, I think you can totally stereotype and say that most florists do have a deep connection to nature.
Yeah, no, it definitely makes sense. I mean, obviously, if you are wanting to be working, interacting with, you know, plant material every day, you're going to want to have that connection to nature. I find it interesting, though, because I feel as if some florists don't necessarily have that. And I've heard of some florists actually going out and degrading nature for the sake of trying to create, you know, some sort of bouquet that might look beautiful, whether that's, you know, going into national parks and taking certain flowers or cutting endangered species. You know, I'm curious about maybe some of the capitalist takeover on like certain plants or flowers that look cool that, you know, brides want in their wedding. And then it leads to, you know, the actually degradation of the environment. Do you have any, you know, words or experience with these kinds of flowers?
I have a lot of words.
Yeah, let's get into it. Sure.
Well, I mean, I guess like not even necessarily about florists in general, but the entire industry, like the floral industry. So when I got into floristry, like I said, I didn't know anything about it. And to be honest, I'm still learning so much, but it's shocking how the floral industry operates. It's kind of, I've compared it to kind of the food industry, which I feel like you're like so well versed in. And it's like this disconnect of where our food comes from. It's the same thing with flowers.
Yeah.
It's like so huge. And we might go and see flowers growing wildly or see plants, you know, in nature more than we would see our produce growing, like on the side of the road or something. But there's still this huge disconnect when it comes to using flowers as art that like as humans we're designing. And I don't know why there's a disconnect with that. But for instance, weddings right now are huge. Like there's been like weddings have become huge. I kind of think with like the increase of social media in the past like 10 years. And then with that, trends, and we see trends with everything, with fashion, with food even, and with the wedding industry. And so for instance, right now it's really trendy to have like a very boho chic wedding where that's going to consist of like a lot of neutral colors, a lot of dried elements mixed with maybe some more tropical elements to give kind of like a bohemian look. Even though I also laugh at the fact that we call it boho chic, because to me, bohemian's like textured and colored.
Okay.
And boho chic is like neutrals and like earthy. So I think that's just, I think it's, yeah. And that's just like how trends work, you know, because I'm like, we don't even know what the word bohemian even really means.
Right. But you know, when you said that word, I could like envision it, but there's no way I would actually be able to describe it. So I appreciate that you did that.
Oh yeah. That's funny. Yeah. Yeah. Like, I feel like it's like true bohemian and then like modern day boho chic.
Okay.
But with that, so with this, like, basically what has come with that is, I'm sure you know what pampas grass is. I'm sure you've seen it. And like everyone listening to this, if you don't know what it is, it's on every Pinterest page. It's in every person's wedding. It's like the neutral color, tall, fluffy grass that like grows invasively everywhere. And there has been an increase in wanting pampas grass to the point where farmers are coming out and like taking a stance against it. Florists are coming out and taking a stance against it. I'm trying to get there. It's hard when you book things so far in advance that I have two weddings that I've promised pampas grass, and that's just kind of their vibe. And at the end of the day, I have a small business, so I also have to make a dollar. But
so just to pause you real quick. So just so I get this right. So the brides or whoever your clients are, they reach out to you and they ask specifically the type of species and flowers that they want. You're not just like delivering them or they're asking, I want modern day boho chic. And that's just so, part of the palette.
Right. So more of what the second half of that. So at least how I operate, I don't promise anything, but I definitely operate on we figure out your vibe, we figure out your style, what you like, and then I kind of go off of that, like your color palette. The one thing though that people ask for is pompous grass.
Okay, so people know
it is like, it is, yes, it is the one thing right now, or they'll pick like a bleached flower or a preserved flower and they'll call it dry. Like, I want some dried elements in my wedding. That's great. But what people aren't realizing is, well, the pampas grass thing is like just this huge, terrible thing that's happening.
It's, yeah, an
invasive,
get into it,
species. So it's an invasive species that it just is going to destroy everything around it. And it grows like a weed. Mm-hmm. Like, it grows everywhere. It also is like a huge, huge, huge fire hazard. So with wildfires, which are like insane, especially in California, and that's where pampas grass is kind of growing everywhere. And so the seeds spread like crazy and take over, and farmers are having it pop up in their farms, in the agriculture and flower farms, and it's just completely taking over. And it's because we have this demand for it.
Crazy.
And another thing that's happening is there's this demand for these dried flowers and bleached flowers, which a lot of people don't even, they'll see something, they don't know it's bleached. Or they'll think something's dried and they want that particular thing when it's really preserved. And what that is just a shit ton of chemicals going into this natural thing to preserve it or to bleach it. And then it's going into your wedding flowers. So there is so much in the wedding industry, which I think is just so ironic, because you would think that flowers are so connected to the earth, but we're basically like changing the way that they are naturally to get us something to design with. And it's the boho chic trendy thing right now is what's hard, and what I'm trying to do along with some other florists is like trying to educate our brides or our clients whenever they inquire, because just like I don't know where my cucumber is coming from when I go to Whole Foods, like they have no idea.
Of course.
The like environmental effects, and also that a lot of flowers are shipped from abroad, yeah, and not even American grown.
Yeah, a huge, huge carbon footprint on, you know, the exportation of flowers. I'm curious about this idea of educating your clients. Have you had an interaction with one of your clients where they requested these things, you provide education, and they actually change their mind? Or maybe perhaps, mm-hmm, the inverse, and say, I don't care about that, I want this vibe and aesthetic, and they decide not to. Or they go with another florist. Mm-hmm. Like, have you lost business, mm-hmm, because of that?
So I've definitely not lost business. I feel like it's actually the opposite effect, because I do think that people actually want to do what's best for the earth. They just have no idea, like absolutely no idea, especially when you see things like so trendy. So yeah, basically if I get a bride who what my biggest focus is seasonality. That's like especially this summer, I've like had a big push for that in my business. So when someone comes up to me and they want, you know, say they want peonies in April, I'm like, well, they're not going to be out yet. So in order to get that, that's going to have to be shipped from Japan or Holland, where they have these massive greenhouses,
right,
or, you know, like, or ranunculus, that's a huge one. And there's different growing seasons, like in Colorado, living in Colorado, it's been really interesting because our growing season's so short,
so short,
and things are more delayed than they are in Seattle. So in Seattle, where I also work, ranunculus are a huge spring flower, and right now ranunculus are still going in Colorado.
Yeah.
So it's been interesting and it's been kind of fun to learn the seasons, but brides and or clients, like I would say 100% of the time when I say, hey, I can't get that flower because it's not in season, they are like so respectful of that.
Good.
And it's also, there's thousands of different kinds of flowers. So if you're drawn to one certain flower, I'm sure you can find one that looks similar.
Yeah, you bet. So I want to go back to this idea of bleaching and drying flowers. Are there any types of dried flowers that aren't artificially dried via, you know, chemicals, etc.? Like, is there in fact actually naturally dried flowers, or are those just like so expensive and take so long that they're actually not used?
So there are definitely, like, a lot of flower farmers will dry their stuff too if they don't sell it all. It is so expensive,
yeah,
to buy dried flowers. It's also expensive to buy preserved and bleached, because there's so much more that goes into it besides the farming,
sure,
and the harvesting.
Sure.
So no, there definitely are natural options, and there's definitely different things you can do. For instance, I had a wedding this last weekend, and she really loved the idea of neutral flowers with some dried aspects. Well, I didn't use a single thing that was dried. I just used plants that grow in nature that kind of give off a dried feel.
Hmm.
So like bunny tails and different kinds of grasses I threw in there, and at a glance, someone who wasn't educated really about plants would probably think there was dried elements in there,
sure,
when really it was all fresh, but they're the types of plants that are going to dry exactly how they look fresh.
Do you as a florist enjoy that type of a challenge? I assume you'd have to educate yourself a lot to try and find mm-hmm. something that looks the same, that's, you know, in season, et cetera, et cetera. Are you enjoying that type of a challenge and that search to try and meet the consumer's needs, but do it in a sustainable way?
Yeah, totally. I honestly, so COVID was kind of a blessing disguise for me in my business. I felt like I was kind of in a burnout, and then COVID hit and I was able to super reflect on like what I'm doing and why I'm doing this. But I'm such a person who's like not okay with contentment. So I'm constantly searching. But the biggest thing that I got out of that, of thinking about my business, was this business means so much to me when I'm able to honor the earth.
Mm.
And if I'm not doing that with this business, then this seems purposeless. So that is, I went into this season after COVID really trying to honor that and say, I'm doing this, like, I'm going to do this in a way that feels right to me.
Yeah.
And so that's going to be trying to find the alternative things to dried or a different flower that's in season versus not. And doing that, I feel like has like given me the purpose of my business, which is kind of interesting.
I love that. I mean, it even kind of sounds like a mission statement, right? You want to do floristry for the sake of honoring the earth. And I just find that so fascinating. And I'm curious, are there other florists in this industry that are kind of approaching that in the same manner? Or are you, do you feel like you are setting yourself apart in that distinction?
Mm. I think there's definitely there's starting to be a push for it, for sure. I feel like I have an advantage kind of because my aunt that I was talking about, who's a botanist, she is so in the world of plants and flowers that she has kind of been there guiding me that way the whole time. When things have become trendy, that probably would take me a lot longer to notice how detrimental it was. She was like calling me being like, absolutely do not use this. Like, do you know how this is happening? But she's in her 70s. So she's been in the game for forever. And so there is a huge push, I would say, honestly, from a lot of older flower farmers and florists, the older generation, because as like a young business owner, it does come down to, are you going to take the job to make money or are you not? Because that's not what your business stands for. So I do think it sets me apart slightly, but there's definitely like a lot of people who at least want to get there. But like you said, it's a lot of education. It's easier to go the other route.
Of course. Well, we see that a lot in agriculture, right? Where, you know, it requires additional knowledge to farm in a certain way that is in harmony with the land, because agriculture in and of itself is an extractive process where you have to disrupt the land to get in. So that's why I so love the regenerative agroecological practices and movement to try and merge agriculture in harmony with the land. But it takes a lot of knowledge and it takes a lot of time. It takes like a deep, intimate relationship with nature. And it's not just like applied across, you know, everywhere, because a farm on the East Coast will look different than on the West Coast, and the soil's different, the climate's different. So it requires that education and that knowledge and intimacy to be able to do these practices in a sustainable way. Now, the problem with that is that then there tends to be then a premium for these types of products, right? Either one, because farming in this way or producing in this way comes at some, you know, cost to pests because you can't use as many pesticides. So you lose a little bit of that profit. And so therefore, in order to make up for what you've lost, you charge a premium. Do you feel that for you, when you are looking for these alternative flowers, do you have to charge a premium?
So I would actually say in the flower industry, it's the opposite of something like ag, because, yeah, I guess this is the main reason. Most flowers you buy at a wholesaler, and these wholesalers are going to be nationwide, if not international. And these wholesalers are buying flowers in such huge quantities to get you like the right price. And a lot of these flowers are coming from Holland, Japan, South America. And so they're going to be kind of expensive because they have all this travel involved. Well, when you go to more of a co-op situation where it's a group of farmers, or in Colorado, there's the Colorado Flower Collective, where she does an amazing job working with all these farmers to get to sell from, you're actually cutting the costs of all the transportation and the huge corporations. So I would say, in generally, sometimes you can get it for a little bit less, but they're going to keep up with wholesale costs, because if you're going to buy the wholesaler, you might as well pay a farmer that too. Sure. But I would say that's the great thing about working with flower farmers in the floral industry, is that you're getting, I would say, the same price of product, if not slightly cheaper, because farmers also are like the best people in the world. So they'll like give you extra shit for free. And you're getting product that lasts way longer because it was cut
right
2 days ago instead of upwards to 4 weeks ago,
right,
and kept in like chemical filled coolers.
Yeah, for sure.
So
yeah, well, you know, I can't help but just find all the similarities just with, you know, food products and agriculture, right? Like eating mm-hmm. local, it's going to taste better, it's going to be more nutritionally dense, totally, and it's going to be, you know, better ripened, and because it doesn't need to be shipped long distances. So yeah, the quality totally, is yeah. going to be there, and that makes sense. But it's I think unique for you guys in that it's going to be actually a cost advantage for you to source your material that way.
Totally. And I always trust my material from farmers more.
Yeah.
It's like no a doubt. Weird, I was just talking to another florist in Denver, and she is huge. She totally focuses on like locality and seasonality. And she was like, I just feel so much more connected to these flowers when I hold them, when they're from the farmer, because they also don't come wrapped in plastic, which is like a whole nother thing you'd never think that the floral industry was contributing to, is single use plastic.
But I'm sure there's a lot.
A ton.
Yeah. Yeah.
A ton.
Well, you know, I think it's fascinating because not only then are you trying to then facilitate connections to the planet, but you're also trying to facilitate connections then to those people who are producing those flowers. Mm-hmm. And I think that, again, just plays into the holistic spectrum of what sustainability is all about, and not just making sure that the planet is happy, but the people living in it are happy as well.
Totally. Totally.
When you're sourcing the flowers, I'm curious, you know, again, just trying to find connections to the ag space. Are there any types of certifications like fair trade or organic? Are there any of these types of certifications when you're sourcing flowers?
I actually had never thought about if there are like legal certifications, because there are flowers that will say fair trade, organic, local, but I don't know if there's actually regulation on that, to be completely honest.
So it's not like USDA organic or...
Well, that's what I'm wondering, because maybe it is. Okay. I actually don't know. That's like actually, I'm going to look that up after this, because that would be fascinating to know. But you will see, especially stuff like from the wholesaler that's getting shipped in, you will see tags like that.
Sure.
Even go to Trader Joe's. Trader Joe's actually does a really great job of buying... I'm pretty sure they only buy American-grown flowers. But all of their stuff will have little tags on it and say like, this is coming from, you know, I don't know, Seattle area or whatever, sure, or it's local. But yeah, I wouldn't say it's as big though as like in the ag industry, like, or going into the grocery store and looking at produce.
Yeah, it makes sense. I mean, there's going to be a marketing component in all of them. I'm curious if, because like, for example, cotton is one of the most sprayed plants in agricultural systems, primarily because we don't consume it, we wear it. However, obviously that still comes with implications. You know, these pesticides can, you know, seep into our skin, et cetera, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So there is still such a thing as organic cotton. I'm curious, again, with flowers, we're not consuming them. Are they notorious for getting a heavy amount of pesticides, herbicides, et cetera?
Oh, yeah. 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 Oh, yeah. And not even what they're sprayed with, but what they're drinking. There's so many different chemicals and flower foods and hydration powders that they put into these flowers' water so that they can ingest it, and dyes. Like, there's a lot of flowers, this year. So Japan's like a huge leader in the floral industry with coming up with, like, I mean, you probably know more about this than I do about how they GMO or change the seeds to create different varieties. But Japan's also really into like coming up with the newest color of things. So you'll go to a flower shop. I mean, we've all seen the like rainbow colored roses at Safeway, you know, or at the general grocery store. So there's that too. There's like so much, I would say there's so many chemicals that go into flowers, and it's probably overlooked, like you said, because we're not ingesting it. But there's been times where I do a lot of flowers on cakes. Like while I'm setting up an event, I'll throw flowers on it. And it's gone through my mind of, oh, was this one of the flowers from the wholesaler, or did I get this from a farmer? Mm-hmm. Because I'm just sticking this straight into their cake, and this is like a bomb of chemicals.
Yeah, it's a great point. I've never actually thought about that before, which kind of just now sparks the question, like, have you ever curated or done any floral designs with plants that are edible.
But not intentionally. I guess I've put edible things on cakes because the client has asked. But yeah, I've had people tell me things are edible, like while I'm designing. Mm. And it's always like, I'm always like, but this wasn't like if this was from the wholesaler, that would be so bad for you.
Yeah.
Like this should not be ingested.
Okay. So overall, then we've talked about pompous grass and dehydrated flowers. Are there any other types of plants or flowers that as a consumer, as a florist, you would want to stay away from?
I mean, I guess I would reverse that to say, look for local or look for, you know, if you're going to go buy flowers and it's the summertime and the farmers markets are out, instead of going to the grocery store, go to the farmers market.
Okay.
So, I mean, I guess that's for a general like consumer. And then for a florist, it is working with the stuff that's coming in seasonally. And if you have to work with like a national wholesaler, that's fine. But those wholesalers are also going to pull things in season as well. So just knowing. So yeah, I guess just reversing the whole thing. And instead of making a list of things to avoid, if you focus on the things that are important in it, there's going to be a huge list of things to avoid naturally.
Sure. Okay. And then as a bride, you know, if I'm getting married and I'm, you know, wanting something for my wedding, then just sourcing local material is going to be my best bet.
Yeah. And I think if you're looking for a florist in general, and that's kind of your vibe, the easiest way to know if a florist truly is going to honor that or not, or if that's kind of how they practice their business, is if they don't let you pick specific flowers. Because if I'm a florist and I'm letting the bride totally dictate the entire vision of what the product I'm going to use to design with, then you know that florist is going to do whatever they need to do to get you that product. And that might be flying in from Holland or flying in from Japan or Ecuador, where instead, if you have a florist that's more focused on your vibe and your color palette, I'm going to provide you the best stuff. That florist most likely is probably doing that, telling you that, because they want it to be open to pick what's local and in season.
So as a bride, then you don't want to become like this bridezilla and like design everything, like go into it with open hands and let the florist know your vision, and then they'll deliver something hopefully that's going to be more sustainable for you.
Right. And always asking, I feel like that's a thing too, is if you ask a florist, hey, I want everything to be local. And even if they're not a florist who really focuses on that, I don't see why they would argue with that, because they could literally go to their wholesaler and say, okay, I want to order everything within these colors that's local this week.
Yeah.
So I was going to say there is a floral shortage right now, a flower shortage, like internationally, like literally around the world. So you can't really do that right now. And that's like a direct effect from COVID and farmers ending their businesses because they couldn't keep up financially. And then a lot of flowers, like I said, are imported and they're not American grown. So we had a hard time getting stuff in the past year, and prices are insane right now for flowers too. And pretty much all roses, it's really rare to get an American made rose because of how they're picked and packaged. Labor's cheaper down in South America. So I don't know, maybe some people who've listening have noticed, even people who like go to the grocery store for flowers, but there is a lot less in prices are a lot more expensive right now, which is kind of crazy.
And so this is a direct effect of the fact that there weren't any events. And so then what was being grown was taken out. And then now it's like slowly trying to catch back up to that demand.
Totally. Yeah. Yeah. You should have, during COVID, oh my gosh, in the beginning of COVID, because Holland is like a huge hub for flowers, and they had thousands of like tons and tons and tons of flowers just thrown into like the landfill. Because there was no demand for it and they didn't know what to do. Yeah, it's crazy.
So I'm curious about your own kind of personal passions and pursuits and ambitions, and that are you desiring or wanting to be able to get to a place where you can produce and grow your own flowers, or do you feel like you enjoy having that relationship with flowers?
Oh, I would love to grow my own flowers. I feel like that's like definitely the ultimate goal, but also seems like a lot of work to be a farmer and a designer because it's all in like one season. But yeah, I do think I actually feel like when I was saying how I talked about, you know, what was important to me with my business while I was thinking about it over COVID, that was one of the biggest things where I feel like I need to like expand that connection to the flowers by growing them. And I feel like that would come full circle.
What do you think you would learn by having to grow your own flowers?
Oh, probably how much work is in it and why we price the way we price. But also just besides that, I feel like there's so much to know about flowers. Even a lot of my work, I do like, you know, day events. And so knowing how that flower is going to last out of water or how long its vase life is, or, you know, what color it actually is going to be after it's picked, that sort of thing. I don't know. And just having that connection, like that deeper connection to growing something yourself and then harvesting it and then using that for art, I feel like that would be really cool.
Yeah, I love that. I love that. One kind of just last side tidbit question for you. What is in the packet that when you go and buy like a bouquet of flowers at the grocery store, what is in that packet and what is it doing for the flowers?
Yeah, so that's flower food. And actually flower food's kind of awesome. I guess I'd describe it it's like a giant vitamin for your flower. So it's going to have all those minerals and things that it was getting from the soil, but you're putting it into your water. And the idea is that is going to help your flower last longer once it's cut. I don't disagree with that, but I've seen a lot of florists do experiments where they do fresh water, changing it every day versus flower food versus, you know, some old wives' tale tricks that people have. And the one that actually always makes your flowers last the longest is giving it new fresh water every single day. So the flower food's not going to hurt your flowers, but I don't know if it's going to really extend it.
Interesting. So fresh water every day will extend the lifespan of your fresh cut flowers.
Totally. Yeah. And then if you really want to be extra and really want your flowers to last a long time, then trim their stems like every 2 or 3 days so that they can drink the water a little bit easier.
Okay. Good to know. All right, everyone. You heard it here first. Trim the stems and change the water, and that will help your flowers last nice and long. Awesome, Piper. Well, go ahead and give us your plug, all your info. How can people find you, support you, and hire you?
Oh, yeah. So Instagram is kind of like my main form of marketing / showing my work. So that's just at Petals by Piper on Instagram. And you can get my website link from there. And yeah, spread the word. Tell your friends who are getting married if they need a florist.
Awesome. I love it. And for everyone else that's listening, hire Piper. If you can't hire Piper, hire a florist that puts the earth first and has that connection to nature and is sourcing their flowers from local sources. Thanks so much, Piper. I appreciate you coming on and sharing all your wisdom and knowledge.
Awesome. Thanks so much, Brendan.